Hi, my name is Mandy Jackson Beverly, and I'm a bibliophile. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Bookshop Podcast, where I interview booksellers and independent bookshop owners from around the world. Tattered Cover is the largest independent bookstore in Colorado, with five locations in and around Denver, and a sixth location planned for Westminster, Colorado, late 2021. They host more than 500 events each year, sell a diverse selection of new and used books, and offer a wide choice of interesting gift items. Tattered Cover is a Denver institution, a community gathering place, and an experience you can't download. With me today is CEO Kwame Spearman. Hi, Kwame, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. I have quite a few questions for you, Kwame, so let's just get straight into the interview. In January 2021, Tattered Cover Bookstore celebrated its 50th anniversary. A few months before, in December 2020, Bended Page LLC purchased Tattered Cover. Can you tell us about the members of the advisory board, how you became the CEO, and were you living in the UK at the time?
Kind of. So it's all, COVID makes everything a mess, right?
Yes.
So I was a tax-paying New York City resident up until I moved to Colorado. But like many of the privileged in New York City, when COVID got really bad, I was able to escape. And so I spent half of 2020 in Vermont, and the other half I was in London. And so the craziness of 2020, we literally were able to negotiate a deal, raise capital, all of through Zoom, to be honest with you, and while I was in a different continent. So essentially, David Back, this is actually all his brainchild. He worked at Tattered Cover, actually, when he was 15 years old. David and I met a year later when we went to rival high schools in Denver, and he always kept Tattered Cover in the back of his mind. And so he read an article that the business at the start of COVID was furloughing some employees and laying off some employees. And he met with the owners with a plan to essentially try to purchase the business. I was not yet enrolled in the class, to put it nicely. But by the end of 2020, I was. And so what we did is we formed Bended Page, which was our attempt to pay homage to Tattered Cover. And really, all Bended Page was a parent company to purchase Tattered Cover. That's really what it was. And so what David and I went out and did is we fundraised. Really more the operational cost of running a bookstore in the middle of a pandemic than actually sort of paying a gigantic amount for the sale of Tattered Cover.
And here you are back in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Tattered Cover actually has a few locations, and you're opening another store later this year. But I was wondering how each store in each location differs from the other.
It's a really good question. So you're 100% correct. I moved back to Denver I'm embarrassed to say this, but for the first 3.5 months, I was literally living in my parents' basement, home that I grew up in.
I think that phrase may be the most popular sentence of 2020.
which was weird. It was one of those things where because it was COVID, somehow it was acceptable. So we have five locations and then three airport locations. However, we are opening a sixth in October, and we just signed a lease on a holiday pop-up. So we'll have a seventh location for the holiday season in 2021. So it's a pretty crazy time. When we purchased the business, there were only four stores. And so we are in rapid growth mode. To answer your question on are the stores different, 100%. One of the things that we are desperately trying to do is I have this belief that bookstores, when executed properly, can become community institutions. And the actual physical bookstore is the center and the heart of a community. And so for us to accomplish that, You know, we want our bookstores to reflect the communities that they're in. And so, you know, while, you know, our Colfax location, which is across the street from East High School, which is where I went, is incredibly proud of that. It's a very large location. It's 20,000 square feet. So that location has a little bit of everything. But if you go to our other stores, you know, we have a store in Littleton, Colorado. And the goal is to sort of to embrace the fact that it's a suburban location and really understand what that community is looking for. You know, similarly, we just opened a children's concept in Aurora. And Aurora, for those of you who aren't Coloradans, Aurora is actually one of the most diverse cities in the entire country. Number of languages, I think, spoken in Aurora public schools, it's like 32. It's wild. It's really a community that you have a lot of immigrant populations really across the globe have found their home in Aurora. And so you walk into our kids' store and the diversity that we have of books and languages and characters, it reaches out and it smacks you. And we were incredibly intentional. You know, when you look at, you know, one of the things that you'll hear for first generation Americans, reading and literature and access to education is in many cases why their parents came to the United States. And so what we felt was to put a bookstore in that community where there wasn't, there was not a place to buy books or to even get books outside of the library in Aurora. So for us, the ability to put a bookstore there and to reflect the vibrancy and the diversity of the community, that's what we're trying to do all of our stores. And I hope as we continue to expand, we do that because every community deserves to have an independent bookstore. It provides so many resources and such a sense of identity, and we hope to fill that void.
That's great. And what about the architecture of each store? Is there a theme that runs through? The one on your website is amazing. It's ultra modern. Whereabouts is that one?
I think the one you're probably referencing is MacGregor Square.
That's a huge store.
It is. You know, so there's certain things to go back in history. Dris Meskis, who didn't found Tattered Cover, but was the CEO and owner for about 40 years. She was a visionary and she really transformed the way people thought about bookstores globally. And so there were a few things she did, and I answer this because all of our stores still have these characteristics. The first is she wanted people to feel comfortable browsing, touching, reading in her store. You know, she would tell customers, take three books off the shelves, read them, sit right here, have a glass of tea, and if you don't like to, put them back on the shelves and buy one, right? That was a huge departure from how people purchased books 40, 50 years ago. The thought process was you touch it, you buy it. And so having that sense of feeling comfortable, just sitting down, reading a book, enjoying the ambiance. Joyce Meskis is the reason why bookstores do that. And so all of our stores have that feeling where we try to have cozy furniture and little nooks and crannies that you can get lost and really sit down and enjoy reading. The second thing Trace did is she created what I call sort of the tattered covered green. And that green is reflected in really the colors that we use, but also our green carpet. And so all of our stores, we try to have some type of tattered covered green carpet infused in them. The other thing that I think is just, you know, you're in a tattered cover when you see our tattered covered bookshelves. So we've had the same carpenter for the past 45 years, and he still builds all of our bookshelves. And so to see these beautiful wooden bookshelves that are so perfectly done for our spaces, that's a tattered cover staple as well. So those three things we try to incorporate in each of our stores. But you're right. One of the things we're trying to do is really imagine what the independent bookstore looks like post-COVID. You know, one of my mentors, I think, put it really bluntly. when you have a period of disruption, people typically look back and they try to apply the old rules to the new world. Don't do that. Just write new rules. And so what was so exciting about this opportunity was we have to have independent bookstores in this country. Independent bookstores have to survive. And so to take an institution like Tattered Cover and imagine what our role should be, what independent bookstores should be doing in the future, that's awesome. And that's what we're trying to do. And so our stores are going to feel different. But those staples, those things that are so uniquely Tattered Cover, those will hopefully stick around forever.
I really like that. And I think to have that sense of familiarity is great for customers. So let's talk about you. You have an outstanding academic education with a BA in political science and history from Columbia University, a JD from Yale Law School, and you studied strategy and entrepreneurship at Harvard Business School. You're also a Denver native. What was the impetus in relocating to Denver as the co-owner and CEO of Tattered Cover Bookstore, Inc.? And how does your previous work experience help with the day-to-day management of the business? I am fascinated with the idea that things we've done and experienced in our past drift back into our lives when we need them to create a new experience. What are your thoughts on this?
It's a really good question. You know, I was in school for a very long time. I always tell people that means I have a lot of debt, more debt knowledge from those years in school. You know, I always wanted to move back to Denver and I just never knew when. So I would come back and David would come back every year and we would have a conversation about moving back to Denver. And we would always sort of conclude with we really wanted to, but there just wasn't the right opportunity. And subsequently I would go back to New York and continue to work and we would do this annually. What I think happened during COVID is I think two things. It was really one of the most clear times where I recognized my own privilege, right? You know, I was, and you know, I said this before, I was able to get out of New York City, you know, and I was able to go, you know, I was in Manchester, Vermont for 5-6 months, having a blast, right? And I would get on Zooms with my old job and people would say, how are you doing? And I would have this beautiful background. I'd be like, oh, you know, I just went for a long bike ride and the air was crisp and beautiful. And I was like, why am I saying this? I mean, people are dying right now. And then, you know, when the world caught on fire, I mean, literally and figuratively around May and June of 2020, it just, that was the moment where I found myself, I should be doing something. Right. And I couldn't even attend a protest because I was just in the middle of a forest. And it really sort of shook me. And I started saying, you know, how can I be more consequential? How can I start doing things that it's not to say that I wasn't proud of what I was doing, but, you know, to give a parallel, you know, if my dad, if he was a few years older, he could not have attended the University of Texas for college because of segregation. And when he got to UT, he was a leader on campus of desegregating the school and faced numerous repercussions for it. You know, his mother was a public school teacher. She was literally fired from her job. This is my dad. This is his protest on campus. You know, and he has these stories. And I don't have those types of stories. And it was one of those things where it just became abundantly clear to me that I wasn't doing enough. And I think a lot of people had that feeling during COVID of really being introspective and asking themselves, what am I doing to better our society and our respective communities? And so I knew that my ability to make an impact would be stronger in Denver because I'm from here. You know, the city is smaller and we're going through a really interesting time. A lot of people moved to Colorado in the 2010s. And so in the 2020s, the fundamental question is, what is our identity? What is our soul? What do we do next? How do we continue to evolve? And I wanted to be a part of those conversations. And the second thing was, you know, I wanted to be closer to my parents. They're obviously getting older. And, you know, we started off and I was sick last week. It's nice to, you know, my parents heard that I was sick. I get a giant thing of soup and fresh fruit and vitamin C everywhere. You know, that's a good feeling. But I think primarily it was really realizing that this community, this country, this planet, you can't just take it for granted. You have to be an active member doing what you believe is the best to help keeping us progress. And that was really the reason why I came back to Denver.
Well, they are all great reasons to come home. And I think for many people, myself included, this has been a retrospective time, and it's a time to think about our future and the possibilities we can create. And what you shared with us about your father is a good segue into my next question, because in 2020, the Tattered Cover bookstore's previous owners came under fire after releasing a neutrality statement on June 6th, stating their commitment to free speech and continuing with the store's 50-year policy of not engaging in public debate. Now, you've had time to speak with your customer base. How do you see Tattered Cover recovering? And as the new CEO, what is your stance on the previous owner's statement?
I think they made a mistake, you know, and I think that they paid a very steep price for that mistake. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that they could not continue owning the company after that, because I think what it showed is that Tattered Cover was not the same type of community institution that had made it so beloved before. And one of the things that businesses and organizations must do, they've got to evolve. They've got to consistently be reinventing themselves. And it doesn't mean that you totally dismiss everything that has made you where you are, but it does mean you have to consistently be thinking about where movements are going and what norms are and how people are viewing certain situations. To me, the biggest problem with the statement is that I look at bookstores and I think our role is to be a source of knowledge. It's to educate. It's to actually tell people, because we've got the resources and we've got the forum for discourse to talk bluntly about things. And sure, do we have to endorse candidates and, you know, get involved in sort of, you know, battles over policy? No, I don't think that's the place for bookstores. But humane abuses, I can't think of a better institution. And if you look at it, Tattered Cover was more silent than they needed to be on Me Too. They were more silent than they needed to be on gay marriage. They were more silent than they needed to be on gun control. And so the BLM statement was just another example of not actually being a community institution. And so, you know, I know the previous owners exceptionally well. They are very good people. I think they made a mistake. But I think that mistake underscored that we had to change our direction. And quite frankly, we're doing that. You know, one of the things I was actually most proud of is we had an employee way before the Stop Asian Hate movement began who sent us information of just, quite frankly, the atrocities that the Asian American community has dealt with since the start of COVID. And we were, I don't want to say we were the first because I don't have holistic data, but we were an incredibly early voice, both in our Denver community, but also across independent bookstores, to not just make a statement about what was happening, but to take a step further and to try to educate on why this is a problem and to talk about the history of discrimination, right? To talk about the fact that during World War II, there were camps, right? While we were fighting against internment camps, you know, in Europe, we were doing the same thing to our own citizens here in the United States to educate. And by just doing that and by elevating the discourse, that's our role. And so while you know, it was an incredibly big mistake. I actually am a believer that everything happens for a reason. And I think that that statement allowed us much faster to really reimagine our role in the community. And I think we're doing that now.
Yeah. And the theme I'm getting from you is that it's all about change and moving forward, and specifically with the vision for the store and the changes that need to be made. We can support freedom of speech. However, we can also decide what we're going to sell, either whether it's a bookstore or, in the same vein, I can decide if I'm going to have a guest on my podcast or not. And if they're in any way speaking badly towards another culture, I probably won't invite them on the show. And I don't think this is a time to be standing behind our coattails when it comes to gun control, protecting our fellow citizens by getting vaccinated against COVID, climate change, and Black Lives Matter. It's just too late for that. We need to be serious about this and be kind to each other.
You know, and what crystallized to me during the Trump years is that I'm over that there are two sides to every story. I'm over the notion that the most progressive thing I can do is listen and try to hear you out. No, right? Like, I'm not going to hear out climate change deniers. I'm not going to hear out people who aren't getting vaccinated right now. I'm not going to hear out people who are comfortable with like systemic racism in this country. I'm not. And because to me, those are universal truths. And I think that's the change for the business, is that I don't think that we are politicizing educating people on climate change. I don't think that we are politicizing not caring literature for people who say that climate change is a hoax. I think we're doing our job as civic-minded citizens, because there aren't always two sides of the debate. And when we give an iota of truth to something that is untruthful, we're hurting our community. You know, I'll give you a story. You know, my mom, she is 35 years working with Denver Public Schools. She retired in December of 2019. I watched her mental health decline, not having a clear purpose during the pandemic. And one of the things that I pushed from her, I was like, you love education. You love mentoring. Get back in the schools. And she did that. And on August 1st, she started mentoring a principal in a DPS elementary school. And, you know, we talked the weekend before, and Delta was increasing, and we've seen sort of what's happened. And why are we having a debate over whether or not people need to get vaccinated, or whether or not people need to wear masks in certain situations? When you allow for those voices, you're harming good people. That's the shift that's occurred, right? Is that I do believe 15, 20 years ago, maybe there was more credence to let's give both sides a play. And that's dangerous to me. It really is. It's way more dangerous than this notion of silencing people, because we've hit some extremes in which you're dealing with really negative consequences for our society. And I can't think of a better example of what we're dealing with in this country right now, with racism, with sexism, with climate change, with the virus, all issues that are pretty clear cut, right?
Yeah, it's incomprehensible to me that in 2021, we're still having this conversation about climate change. Every day we see damage to the planet, and it comes through, you know, with fires and floods, absurd weather patterns worldwide, which we were warned about would happen. What is it going to take for people before they understand what's happening and listen to science?
You know, and one of the things that I said when we took over, both internally and externally, is our Northern Star. We just want to be on the right side of history. And I think that because these things are like universal truths, you know what the right side of history looks like. You know that in 20 years, not acknowledging climate change, you will be wrong. You know that in 20 years, not acknowledging gaps in gender equality, you will be wrong. And so that's how we try to make our decisions now, is just, do we want to, because quite frankly, you know, you look at this, every movement, you know how this story ends, right? I've watched it. I think the best example for me is for how, you know, we think about the LGBTQ community. And I've seen that in my lifetime, right? How norms have just fundamentally changed. And my only regret is that I wasn't more of an advocate earlier in my life. And so I think if you take that approach, and if you use the fact that as a bookstore, you have so much information and you have a setting in which people are looking to communicate, and most importantly, communicate respectfully and reasonably, our mission, at least in my opinion, is to be that for the community. Because if we have these rational conversations, I truly believe people will leave acknowledging these existential threats, and they'll start improving their lives to help to a better outcome.
I completely agree, and I'm with you all the way. Now, we've talked a lot about community. So how do you plan to nurture community support and engage in local outreach? In other words, what is your vision for the future of Tattered Cover? A few days ago, when I was researching Tattered Cover, I read a news article, or maybe it was on your website, when you were moving locations and you had community members just coming and helping you move all the books.
A bookworm.
Yes, I love that. It was great.
You know, the only reason why we're doing this, to be honest with you, is for the community, right? I think that both the experience of having a community interact is something that, if you look at big booksellers, you know, Amazon's included, that's something they don't do. And so to me, the ability to create a community environment that does all of the things we've been talking about, creates an experience, introduces people to books, has an opportunity for dialogue, that's why we're in the business, right? And I think what we've realized is that we have to create that community both inside our stores, but also outside. And we have to go and we have to meet people, and we have to both invite them in, and we also have to create community around them, right? Because that's what the world, I think, requires right now. I think how we do that, I think it's really through inclusivity. You know, something that we've been working on is, you know, ESL events at our stores. You know, I look at Denver, I don't know the exact number, but I think Denver is 30-35% Latinx community. We don't see that representation in our stores, right? And so the question is, what things are we doing to overtly tell that community that we want them? And so for us, we're starting to do events in Spanish to sort of welcome and give people comfort. Let them know that we have books that are in Spanish. We welcome different languages in our stores. And once again, once you can bring that community in, you can start doing the things that we talked about, helping just a broader love of reading, engaging in dialogue and conversation, and really moving the needle forward.
That's great to hear. Kwame, while I was reading the store's blog, I was taken with the awesome collection of books on baseball. As it happened, I just finished interviewing author Luke Eplin about his book, Our Team, which is the epic story of four men and the World Series that changed baseball. So who are the baseball fans in the store who order all the books on baseball?
So Denver had the wonderful benefit of hosting the 2021 Major League Baseball All-Star Game. If everyone remembers, Georgia, and once again, this is one of those things where I'm like, I just think these are universal truth. Georgia voted to disenfranchise their voters earlier this year and to put more draconian voting ID laws in place because more people voted than they wanted. And in response, Major League Baseball said that they weren't comfortable hosting the All-Star game in Atlanta. And so 3 months before the game, in the middle of the pandemic, Denver was awarded it. And you know, baseball is incredibly intertwined in Tap Recover. One of our newest stores, McGregor Square, is literally located across the street from Coors Field. And the Rockies owner is an investor in the business. And so we are very intertwined. And so when we saw the opportunity to have the All-Star game in our backyard, we wanted to go wild. And one of the things that we believe, reading is fun, right? And there are different genres, books, types of authors, and all you need to do is just introduce someone to it. And so we said, why not create the largest curation of Major League Baseball themed books outside of Cooperstown? And let's do it for a week and let's have it outside our store. So everyone who's walking by can sort of see all of the baseball books, and baseball enthusiasts have another reason to read. And we did virtual events, we did in-person events, and we had over like 6,000 baseball books outside our store. It was awesome. And it was one of those things where that to me is how you build community.
Absolutely. And what a fun idea. Now, our listeners are global and like to hear about the locations of the indie bookstores we visit. So can you give us a brief tour of Denver's geography, demographics, community, local artisans and local authors, and outdoor activities? In essence, what you love about Denver.
Sure. So welcome to the Mile High City. You know, if we had done this interview 10 years ago, I would say that Denver is America's best kept secret. I got to be honest with you, I think the secret's out. And I think people realize how marvelous this city is. And what I mean by that is when I say the Mile High City, we are elevated 5,280 feet above sea levels. When you come here, it's relatively dry. You may struggle to breathe, particularly if you go for a run. But what that creates is a landscape that really isn't throughout our country and quite frankly, throughout our world. Right to the west of Denver, about 45 miles, you have the heart of the Rocky Mountains with more 14ers. And by that, mountains that peak above 14,000 feet, more 14ers than any other state in the nation. And just a beautiful, picturesque backdrop. So the number one thing you'll hear about Colorado is the outdoor opportunities, and they range really using the mountains as our backyard, skiing and snowshoeing. But honestly, in the spring, summer, and fall months, there's just as much going on with hiking and mountain biking and camping and fishing. And all of those opportunities are really almost literally in your backyard. When you're in the city of Denver, it has become a thriving metro area. We have a really up and coming restaurant scene here. You know, Mexican is, I'd say, still what we are known for, but the take on Mexican and the modern Mexican cuisine here, numerous restaurateurs and chefs have had a lot of fun reimagining sort of your traditional Mexican fare. And so that's something I would absolutely recommend. The other thing that we've seen is a lot of transition of our neighborhoods. So we've been able to warehouses and really revitalize those neighborhoods. The draft beer and wine scene here has exploded. And if you go to our Rhino area, which is basically our the northern part of the city, that is now an area in which you can watch draft and craft beer being produced. There are restaurants, everything is bikeable. There's an amazing art scene. To piggyback on art, you know, this is the home of authors like Peter Heller. And I think what you're starting to see is there is a mountain artist vibe that I think is becoming more in vogue. And I think what that is it's kind of a rugged Westernism in that there's a liberal leaning bent, but an independence and an authenticity that sort of permeates through our writers, our artists, our musicians. And so it's a really cool city. It's a place where people still are exceptionally nice. And it's maybe a step behind on pace in a good way from our coastal areas, in which, you know, people actually take some time to enjoy their surroundings and life.
You're a good docent, Kwame. That was excellent. Thank you. Now, what in your mind makes an outstanding indie bookstore? I have my ideas about this, but I'd really like to hear your thoughts.
That is a really great question. I mean, I think first and foremost, the love of literature, I think, is really paramount. I always look at that from a bookseller point of view. I think the coolest thing in our stores is our what we call shelf talkers, which is our staff recommendation section, where, you know, our staff have read the book, they tell you why they love the book, and we really show it prominently in our store. I think that level of curation is only at an independent bookstore, right? That's the only place you'll find that. You know, I also think how the space is being used, and I think you see two extremes, overflowing of books and sort of the opportunity for people to congregate. And lastly, just a feeling of welcomeness, right? That people want to share their love with you. But I'm so curious to hear yours.
Well, apart from the obvious, the books that are curated there, for me, it's all about the booksellers. For example, in Ojai, where I live, we have a local bookshop called Bart's Books. It's been here for years. It's mostly outdoors, which sounds weird, I know, but we live in a fairly warm climate. And depending on what I'm researching or what I want to read, I can email Bart's, let them know what I need. I can go in there and there will be a stack of books waiting for me. And I can just sort through what I want. Most of the time, I end up buying all of them. But they know my name. And on a funny note, I have friends now who also shop there, and they'll go in there and say, what are some books Mandy's looking for? And they'll buy them for me as a surprise. Even though I've ordered them, my order will seem to be taking a little longer. And lo and behold, I'm presented with a gift which they've ordered for me. So they have taken their time to get to know what I need, what I like to read. And I know I'm not the only customer who feels like this. They just make me feel like I'm part of their indie bookshop community.
I love it. No, and I totally agree with you. Our booksellers are everything. They're the cornerstone, because knowledge and enthusiasm is why people continue to come in.
Yeah, and there's a talent to being a bookseller, which I acknowledge and I admire. I have one final question for you, Kwame. What is one book you'd like to see more people reading?
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, to be honest with you, I take a very Montessori approach to this, where I actually don't think there's one genre, one type of author, even one subject that people should be reading. I think that's the beauty of literature, is that everyone, and I mean this, everyone loves to read. The question is finding out what. And I think that is the role of an independent bookstore, is to make that connection. I love, you know, historical fiction. I love leadership. But I don't know if that's what everyone loves. And I think that's okay. If you're sci-fi, if you're YA, that's awesome. And read more, right? Like the stimulation, the way it encourages you to think, just read. And so, you know, I think it's really searching for what you like and then doing that.
Yeah, good advice. And is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know before we sign off?
No, you know, and I'm sure your listeners are sympathetic to this, but I always must say it. you know, what we are seeing, and I'm very nervous about how the virus affects the holiday season, but local small businesses are in the fight of their life right now. And we as a society within our respective communities have to make decisions. Do we want local businesses or not? And, you know, I obviously think everyone knows my answer, but where I push is people should really think conscientiously about it, because it's not just enough to say, oh yeah, I like that we have an independent bookstore. You have to shop at that independent bookstore, right? That is it. That is saying you want it to be there. And it's not just in a bookstore. It's every type organization. And I just always want people to remember that. Actions in this case do speak louder than words. I get the ease sometimes of going to the big bad competitor. I get it. And so I'm not preaching 100% loyalty, but I am reminding people that if you don't support local businesses, they won't exist. They really won't.
My words of wisdom are this: buy local, read global, support your local indie bookshop. Kwame, thank you so much for being here today, and I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you. This is wonderful. You're fantastic.
Make sure to follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Mandy Jackson Beverly, or go to my website at mandyjacksonbeverly.com. And if you'd like to buy me a coffee or support an episode of the Bookshop Podcast, go to thebookshoppodcast.buzzsprout.com, click on the little orange heart at the top right-hand side of the page, and you can make a donation using PayPal. Thanks for listening, and remember, buy local, read global, support your local indie bookshop.